I on Wisconsin. As always, your host, Corey J. Escape is futile.
Nice haiku, Captain. Let's take a listen to a little song about taxes.
Sing a song of taxes. Working class cancer sore. Be in Boston Harbor. Revolutionary war of giving to the rich and taking from the poor. Sing a song of taxes, let's even up the score. Sing a song of taxes in the presidential pew. Throw in greased senators and corrupt congressmen in the brew. Add a depraved governor, the Education Regency Board. A few greedy city council members and Attila the Hun's great horde. Let's all tax the trucker for driving down the road. And tax the company janitor for cleaning the commode. Put a levy on the mechanic for changing auto oil. Don't forget the tired farmer for turning up the soil. College student for learning how to think, and tax the hotel maid for scrubbing out the sink. Don't overlook the waitress for serving up the food, and tax the exotic lady for dancing in the nude. Let's tax the faithful mother for bringing up her son. And tax our country's children for chewing bubble gum. Put a tax on entertainment, cigarettes and the liquor store. Raise sales tax, ship the burden to the homeless and the poor. Sing a song of taxes, fight illegal wars for oil. Slash aid for the veterans, dig out on the corporate spoil. Privatize Social Security, fill the purse of the Wall Street whore. Reduce firefighters, police, and the planet's health just ignore. Build some Mimex missiles and a B-51 or two. Bring the world with laser weapons, paint them all red, white, and blue. Print up some cardboard money. Who cares if we all go broke? Who'll notice it's our fault when the planet goes up in smoke? Supply-side neo-con men with a $1 trillion rip-off scam. Give the poor half a cup of water and the rich Grand Coulee Dam. Borrow from our children's future on the backs of the working class. Buy the wealthy a few more yachts while the rest take it in the ass. Tax us up every orifice, keep giving us the screw. And next time the vote comes round, find out what the people can do. Run your pork fat butts out of office, put your family on the welfare line. You'll be in some federal hole, bottoms up doing hard rock time. Sing a song of taxes at the U.S. National Bank. Open up the vaults, clean out the septic tank. Cry out from the gutter, beat on your garbage can. There's a God in heaven up above, save us all from the tax man. Sing a song of taxes, working class cancer sore. In Boston Harbor and Revolutionary War, of giving to the rich and taking from the poor.
We're all mad as hell and we ain't gonna take no more.
I don't know nothing about that. All I know is that somebody is gonna get the ass whooped over this thing.
I'm with you there. God almighty. Hey, everybody, this is Corey J., Iowa Wisconsin Podcast. Now, it should be said that I am not against taxes. And that song wasn't against taxes, as it were, but it was against this unfair shifting of taxes from the rich to the poor. And that's exactly what this crowd that's in charge of our federal government is all about. That's what I'm against. I mean, when you're cutting programs that are helpful to the working class, the working poor, and the and those in poverty, and you're giving irresponsible tax cuts to the wealthiest of the wealthy, and all sorts of windfall profits passing over to all these corporations, yet we're paying the same amount or more. I mean, the working class and the poor and the working poor, that's where I've got the problem. That's exactly where I've got the problem. And now we find out that, you know, not only are we, but, you know, the working person, I don't know, I keep hearing that the economy's doing so well. You know, they always say this, and yeah, that may be true for the corporate interests. That may be true for the super wealthy and the investor class in our society. But I'm sorry, I know many people in our state, in this city, in our area, here in southeastern Wisconsin, that are struggling just to get by. Struggling just to pay their bills. These are not deadbeats. These are people that are working hard, in some cases, are doing more than one job because they just can't make ends meet. I mean, these are the people we're talking about. I mean, gas prices went up to almost $2.50 a gallon again last week. And natural gas, I don't have to tell anyone about that. We're paying so much more for that now, right in the middle of winter. And now, the latest thing is the Public Service Commission. And yes, it's under a Democratic governor. I could care less. Once again, they let We Energies raise the electricity rates. They didn't let them raise it as much as they could have, but they didn't hold it down to as low of a number as possible either. And I think that's unacceptable. We're not paying enough. I mean, and they're posting darn good profits in the last few quarters, last two for sure. And We Energies has to, you know, they can't share some of this burden with us. They need to pass on increases. And the Public Service Commission apparently says, hey, that's okay, go ahead. You know, we're not paying enough for the heat, now we're going to pay even more for electricity. And it may not be a huge amount, but it's an increase, just when we don't need it. And if it's not that big of an increase, why couldn't they absorb some of that? Why does the working person have to absorb it all? So, that's my problem. When the burden is on the poor, the working poor, and the working middle class. That's what I have a problem with. You know, I know just from personal experience. Now I'm paying, you know, even more for health care coverage. That went up. You know, and that much more comes out of my paycheck is that much less I have to make ends meet. I myself have started doing extra work just to try to pay the bills. So, you know, this is just absurd. You know, hey, I'll pay my fair share of taxes, but don't put an undue heavy burden on me and the rest of the people like me, which is the masses, while the rich and the wealthy and the so-called elite get more and more breaks and more benefits and more profits. And they profit from this government that is supported by my taxes. I mean, just think of the example back when Russ Darrow, I'll never forget, when he was running for senator for the primary, and Tim Michaels beat him out. But a perfect example of this is, I think, I can't remember which year it was, but I remember in a story that it reported that he did not pay, he paid no taxes two or three years ago or something like that. Or I don't know if it was last year. I don't remember what year it was. But that's what I'm talking about. Is there not something wrong with somebody as wealthy as him not paying any taxes one year, but someone like me or anyone else who's barely in the middle class, struggling to stay in the middle class, and I'm paying more taxes than him? You gotta be joking. So, anyway, I thought that was an appropriate song given the latest news, well, about the increasing the prices of gas again last week, and then also the Public Safety Commission approving yet another increase by We Energies, this time for electricity rates. Now, I need to quickly mention that last week, I believe it was Tuesday morning's Journal Sentinel, they had a story entitled "Mudslinging Starts Early in Campaign for Governor." And the reason I have to mention this is because I was reading through the story. It was a busy day last week. If you couldn't tell by my lack of normal numbers of posts last week, I'll let you know that it was a busy, busy week work-wise last week. I just was too busy to, I wish I did get paid to do this blog and this podcast, but unfortunately I don't. So when work really picks up, I have to slow down in other aspects. But anyway, I read this story early in the morning, Tuesday morning last week, and I'm reading along and, same old innuendo and this and that about Doyle and even, different things, that points that I've made about Green. And then it comes to Walker and makes him look like he's the messiah or something of clean government or something. And I am more and more convinced that the Journal Sentinel is just in love with this guy. I just am. I mean, I can't remember the last time they've been critical of him at all. And even more so when it involves campaign finance issues. In the story, they approach the issue of him giving back that $325 back to the executives of Phoenix Care Systems. And as most of you already must know by now, that we are the ones that broke that story on our blog. It was a November 21st post, if you want to go back and look at it. But one of the issues that we exposed in that report was the fact that these executives of this company, Phoenix Care Systems, were contributors to his campaign. And then they proceeded to get a no-bid contract back in 2004. And when the AP picked up on that and they reported it, the Journal Sentinel, of course, refused to report it. But after that story got out there, that's when the Walker campaign decided to give back $325 to these people. Now, they got over $2,000-some dollars, but they only gave back $325. But the Journal Sentinel, in the midst of all this innuendo about both Green and Doyle, and then when they get to Walker, they talk about him giving back that $325, but don't say one word about why he gave it back. And they almost make it sound like it was his idea. Well, he never said anything about giving that $325 back until our story was picked up by the AP and that went public. That's the first he ever, that when he was under pressure, that's when he decided to give that money back. So, it's just disgusting to see that, one, the Journal Sentinel, as we all know, didn't report at all on that issue. And then when they just finished talking about different rumors, innuendos, and everything else, and accusations against both Doyle and Green, and I'm no friend of Green, as you all will know already and will know before this podcast is over, I'm no friend of Green, but they did all this innuendo and stuff, and there's enough to go around, including for Walker. Not the least of which was the report that we broke here at Ion Wisconsin. But, of course, the Journal Sentinel didn't report on that. And then they talk about all this in the story. They get to Walker, and they say he gave back $325 like that's some badge of honor. Well, the reason he gave it back is because it was a questionable situation there that, excuse me, Journal Sentinel, you didn't report on. You failed. And then when you report on him giving the money back, you almost make it, like I said, like it's a badge of honor for him. That wasn't a badge of honor. He was afraid of how that made him look. Unfortunately, since you didn't report on that subject, it makes you look like a jackass, you being the Journal Sentinel, if you would have brought it up here. But at least you would have been truthful in spelling out why he gave that money back. But, of course, I really think there's like an overall war on blogs there at the Journal Sentinel. I keep reading more and more, and from the left and the right, by the way, not just from the right-wing leaning columnists over there, but they're promoting their blogs like crazy. from their reporters, but they seem to be attacking blogs, and I'm talking about attacking all blogs, not just liberal or Democratic-leaning blogs. They seem to be attacking all of them. And I honestly think, A, they have a love affair with Scott Walker, and that is their darling. I mean, it has to be that, because they have blocked out all reason, or they simply are, feel like they look bad because a blog, in this case, Iowa, Wisconsin, in this matter, beat them to a story. So what? So what? I'm quoting you all the time in my blog. Come on, why the hard feelings? You know, if I just stumble onto something first, or investigate something first and find something and report on it first, there should be no shame in you reporting on it. You know, but clearly one of those two things are the case with the Journal Sentinel. And I at least had to mention the fact that they got so very close to mentioning our investigative report that they refused originally to print anything about. And they got so close last week, Tuesday, and then they decided to leave out the reason as to why Walker gave back this money in the first place, which then turned around and made him look like this was some badge of honor, which it was not. Well, let's talk about Mark Green now, to be fair and balanced. Yeah, of course, I don't claim to be fair and balanced. But anyway, at least there's no lying here. Mark Green, as soon as Tom DeLay was indicted, let's put it that way, I found out that very same morning that Mark Green and Paul Ryan, among many others, had received tens of thousands of dollars from Tom DeLay and his various PACs. That very day, we posted something demanding both of them to return that money or donate it to whatever, just get rid of it, right? And Democrats and liberals and the chorus has grown stronger and stronger of people who have been demanding that they give that tainted DeLay money back or get rid of it and not use it for themselves in their own campaigns. And no, 101 different reasons why we can't, oh, that, blah, 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 over and over. I mean, every time they would be questioned on this, they had a new reason for why they shouldn't give it back. And then just a couple weeks ago, even Scott Walker joins the chorus, you know, Mark Green's primary opponent for governor. And even he says that Green should give that money back. He doesn't know why he would hang on to it or keep it. And, of course, Mark Green's people, I mean, he put out in his newsletter a little attack on Scott Walker for suggesting that. And then also the newest blogger over at wisopinion.com, Deb, at Above the Belt, the Above the Belt blog. Incidentally, she debuted the same week, which was last week, as I Am Wisconsin, as far as debuting on wisopinion.com. But anyway, she took a pretty hard swing at Scott Walker for suggesting that as well. Now, I personally like to see these conservatives fighting over each other. It's amusing and it's a fun time. I mean, it's better than watching the NFL playoffs, especially since the Packers are nowhere in sight on that. But anyway, so what happens after all of this excuse-making by the Green camp, all of these various excuses, just 101 excuses, what happens last week? He announces that he is not going to use the tainted $30,000 in DeLay money for his campaign. He's going to put it, I guess, in a separate account and, like, figure out what he's going to do with it, but he's not going to use it for the for his campaign for governor, which makes me wonder, well, you were saying we were wrong for insisting on this all this time. You were giving all these excuses why you shouldn't give it back, and we told you it was about perception and not giving the slightest hint of impropriety, and it wasn't about people being convicted or not. It was about the perception of the matter, but no, that wasn't good enough for you, and you didn't see why you should give it back, and then it was illegal, all these things. And then now you're attacking, just last week, you and your surrogates are attacking Scott Walker for suggesting this. And now you turn around and decide to give it back. Well, congratulations to you. But that still doesn't mean I understand why you've been born again on this issue. Congratulations for finally listening to me because I'm sure that's the reason why you did it, and giving back, or not, maybe not giving back, but at least agreeing not to use the tainted delay money. Congressman Paul Ryan, how about you?
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh!
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rapid. I'm horrendous, I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling. I'm so full of bull, so full of crap. With condescending cries, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts. I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic cuts.
I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fat conservative butthead with a face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead
hey,
with a face of a horse's ass.
I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another
story. I have a face the size of a washtub, and my ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes!
This bastard is sick. He's a fat mob as big, and his ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes, Kirby Bob!
Manipulating statements, exaggerate the truth. I can't believe they hate my show. It smiles. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm a concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle classes. I'm a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
They say that this is not about my vanity. They doubt my sanity. They think I'm nuts. I am a cyst on the ass of humanity. New Republican slogan, read my putts. From the bowels of Eve, comes the voice of Rush Limbaugh. In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob. I'm the cop of the top of Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-of-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the democratic trashing, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a pig, I'm the fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I really am,
because
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag with a face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative
butthead. Hey, sick Republican sleazeball. Fear-mongering scumbag.
Oh.
Egotistical ass bite. Mean-spirited, hog-wallering fat conservative tots.
With
the face
of a horse's ass.
Well, that's Iowa Wisconsin way of wishing Rush Druggy Limbaugh a happy birthday, which I believe was last week. Well, let's move on to the next subject, something that the local neocon brigade here in Wisconsin can't stop talking about, and that's this tire-slashing case in Milwaukee. Now, we're just going to touch on it. I don't know all the details of this case. I don't pretend to know all the details of this case. This is something that the jury should be the ones to know thoroughly. So I'm not going to, you know, I sat in on one small portion so far, just because I happened to be down at the Milwaukee County Courthouse. But again, I don't pretend to know anything about the case. But I do know one thing. Don't you just love how these Republicans here in our state and in our area, how they just rush to say, oh, well, Tom DeLay's innocent until proven guilty. Oh, well, Bob Ney, he's innocent until proven guilty. Oh, yeah, you know, over and over and over with all these corrupt people on their side of the aisle. And now you got this tire slashing case, and they have all but convicted and sentenced these five people who are on trial here in Milwaukee. Now, I just happened to see, which I try to stay away from, but I just accidentally saw Charlie Sykes' TV show this past Sunday, which, you know, they really only had one somewhat progressive on there, Linda Bruin, county supervisor from Milwaukee County, and the rest were moderate Michael Holt and, extreme right-wingers, the rest of them. Reardon and Jessica McBride and, of course, Charlie Whackjob Sykes himself. But they, you know, they're talking about this, and especially McBride, Sykes, and Reardon have these guys convicted already. And, of course, McBride, as we posted last week, she's has her conspiracy theorist hat on. You know, that old tinfoil hat they always attribute to left-wing, liberal-leaning people. Well, you know, she's got her tinfoil hat on, and she's, oh my God, you think that there was an order came from on high, you know, from the DNC to go slash tires. Come on. I mean, okay, I'll put my tinfoil hat on here now. Okay, Jessica? And I think, what I think happened was this was actually, I know you're going to find this hard to believe and hard to accept, but I believe it was Karl Rove. I believe he somehow snuck into the state, and he was rolling around in that mud where all those vehicles were parked, and he slid all those tires just like he bugged his own office back in Texas so that he could blame it on the other guy. Yeah, that's what I think. It was a grand conspiracy all put together and perpetrated by Karl Rove. I mean, that's about, that makes about as much sense as what Jessica McBride is talking about. And, you know, apparently some of these out-of-staters that came in did do some things that they shouldn't have. Apparently they admitted in court to pulling a few yard signs out, Republican yard signs out, which is disgusting. It is. It's disgusting. And it makes me mad that they did that. You know, because then that's something. And come on, Republicans. Like no Republicans vandalized anything throughout the country. I mean, you know, go search the internet for news stories about that. I mean, during the 2004 election, there were plenty of things like this on both sides, which is disgusting. But the main thing is that these Republicans have these guys convicted already. And, you know, if they don't have them convicted, they're trying to somehow put on their tinfoil hat and pretend there was some grand national democratic scheme. You know, I mean, how many voters would these vans have gotten to the polls anyway? Do you really think you would have won Wisconsin if someone wouldn't have slit the tires of those vehicles? I mean, come on. It sounds like you're a bunch of sore losers to me. I mean, you haven't won Wisconsin in a presidential election for quite a long time. And no matter what happens with this case, that you suffered the same fate in 2004 that you have for quite a while. Deal with it. Deal with it. Okay, now we're going to talk about this great, great, wonderful, spectacular Medicare drug benefit that the president pushed so hard, and that the sheep that we know him, Mark Green, apparently felt was a great idea, great grand idea, even though it's big government at its worst. Everybody knows who takes a look at this Medicare prescription drug benefit, this Republican version anyway, knows that this was just a huge windfall for the drug companies. And people stood up and tried to say, look, this is not a good idea. One, it's a huge bloated program that's, like I said, there to benefit the drug companies. And a big payoff to the drug companies. That's it. And now we're starting to see our chickens come home to roost now that it's actually started. Well, first of all, they said it would cost a certain amount just to get votes, and then it ended up costing much, much more. But they got it passed by lying. And just a shameless bunch of people, these Republicans. God. And then, you know, they get it passed. And then, you know, the governor, our current governor, and hopefully our future governor after this year, Governor Doyle had to run to the rescue and personally lobby the HHS secretary because this Medicare prescription drug benefit that Mark Green and George Bush ushered in was such a disaster that it was going to possibly end the much more superior senior care here in Wisconsin. It would have ended that program. And the program, in many cases, is much, much better than whatever Mark Green and George Bush were able to devise in this huge, bloated giveaway to the drug companies known as Medicare drug prescription benefit. Now, now we find out after this actually has started working through the process since the first, that so many people are confused, first of all. That's the first problem. And that means a lot of people, pharmacists, elderly, just a lot of people. But the big problem now all over the state, and once again, Doyle has to come running to Green's rescue, because he got behind a bill that sucks. I mean, to put it bluntly. And, now people are finding that they're not getting their prescriptions, especially people who qualify for both Medicare and Medicaid. These are the people, and there's hundreds of thousands apparently throughout the country, and all sorts of states across the country are seeing this problem, and they're all having to deal with it and find some stopgap measure in their state on a state level to make up for the slack of this federal program that was prostituted out there by George Bush and Mark Green. Once again, Governor Doyle to the rescue. So, as I say in a post that I just did Sunday, which was yesterday, Doyle has to clean up another green mess for the elderly. So, you know, elderly voters out there, you see what Green got behind. And you see the mess it has caused, both you and your pharmacist. And it was all about giving a big giveaways to the drug companies. And who's the one, even though he wasn't responsible for this big mess, who's the one who makes sure that he gets a stopgap in there to cover those who may be going without their medication? Governor Jim Doyle, that's who. I mean, that's just the truth. Deal with it. As most of you know, as I cool down here toward the end of the podcast this week, Monday, today, the 16th, is when we take the time to honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And a lot of people, a lot of politicians, a lot of radio talk show hosts who share very little in terms of the ideals of Martin Luther King. They always seem to focus on specific, some of the more famous comments, I guess, from Martin Luther King. But some comments that he had made before his tragic death and murder that a lot of people don't focus on at all are some of his anti-war comments that he made about the Vietnam War. And when you listen to some of those comments, boy, do they strike a chord today. I mean, if I substitute Vietnam for Iraq, I truly, you would think that he had just said that about our current situation. The following are Martin Luther King Jr.'s comments from a November 1967 speech at the National Labor Leadership Assembly for Peace. Now, what are some of the domestic consequences of the war in Vietnam? It has made the great society a myth and replaced it with a troubled and confused society. It has given the extreme right, the anti-labor, anti-Negro, and anti-humanistic forces a weapon of spurious patriotism to galvanize its supporters into reaching for power right up to the White House. It hopes to use national frustration to take control and restore the America of social insecurity and power for the privileged. It is disgraceful that a Congress that can vote upwards of $35 billion a year for a senseless, immoral war in Vietnam cannot vote a weak $2 billion to carry on our all-too-feeble efforts to bind up the wound of our nation's 35 million poor. This is nothing short of a Congress engaging in political guerrilla warfare against the defenseless poor of our nation. When I first decided to take a firm stand against the war in Vietnam, I was subjected to the most bitter criticism by the press, by individuals, and even by some fellow civil rights leaders. There were those who said that I should stay in my place, that these two issues did not mix and I should stick to with civil rights. Well, I had only one answer for that, and it was simply the fact that I have struggled too long and too hard now to get rid of segregation in public accommodations to end up at this point in my life segregating my moral concerns.
We are living in dangerous days, and I am frightened by what you say. We are bound. What kind of world is this, where hatred can persist? It chills right to the core, this talk of holy war. Really love your brother, did in New York City is the darkest kind of crime. What can we tell our children if we respond in kind? We only teach them violence. Got
I don't know about you. I ain't gonna study war no more.
By what you say, it's you.